IMF has slammed Ghana's economic management, citing reckless pre-election spending and reform delays in late 2024 as the reason for derailing the $3 billion US bailout program. Well, this mishap has halted the disbursement of hundreds of millions in support, prompting the new government to take urgent corrective measures. The IMF warned that Ghana's only way to avoid economic collapse is to strictly adhere to the program's requirements, directly implicating the previous Akufo-Addo administration and Minister Amin Adam, who was in charge of finance, for the overspending and inflation woes that derailed the bailout. Well, lead researcher with the Joy News team, Isaac Kufiyeje, joins me in studio with details from the IMF. And Isaac, even before we go into details of the latest report from the IMF, let's backtrack a little to 2023. Government made some key promises.
Okay, let's start with Abinah Osei-Asare on November 21st, 2023, who was at the time the Deputy Finance Minister to Ken Oforiatta. And in fact, we start with Abinah Osei-Asare on November 21st, 2023, who was at the time the Deputy Finance Minister to Ken Oforiatta, first made a promise that government was not going to overspend in 2024, which was an election year. Now, this was after the 2024 budget had been, you know, presented to Parliament.
In the past, governments have used election year as auctioning periods and getting all kinds of projects to win votes. But this government is committing itself to strong fiscal consolidation and efficient management of existing commitments in order not to derail the hard-won stability that we are witnessing. Mr. Speaker, as part of this commitment, government is not initiating new commercial loan-funded projects. This tells you government is really committed to living within its means.
And she's not the only one, we understand.
Well, absolutely. In 2024, Dr. Amin Adam, when he became the finance minister, made a similar promise. This time, it was a promise to the IMF itself. They will not indulge in any slippages, Ken.
Assessment to strengthen Bank of Ghana's autonomy. We are committed, ladies and gentlemen, to sustaining our macroeconomic policy adjustment and reforms to fully restore macroeconomic stability and debt sustainability, while fostering a sustainable increase in economic growth and poverty reduction. Despite the fact that 2024 is an election year, we are committed to enhancing domestic revenue mobilization and tightening expenditure commitment controls to avoid policy slippages.
That's the former finance minister, Amin Adam. And obviously, we have been hearing from the International Monetary Fund. What have they been saying?
Well, Stefan Rode, who led a team to Ghana at the time, welcomed the promise by government to religiously stay within their means. Ken.
Looking ahead, staying the course by adhering to the committed policy and reform agenda remains essential to fully restore macroeconomic stability and debt sustainability, especially in the context of the upcoming general elections. We welcome the commitment from Minister Adam and various other government officials to stay the course on reforms.
Right, and in fact, that wasn't the first time Stefan Rode made that pronouncement.
Absolutely. In December of 2024, Amin Adam insisted that they will not overspend. And this was the election month. He spoke at, you know, a monthly news conference by the IMF and the finance ministry. And he said that government was not going to overspend around that time.
Ghana has been performing well as far as fiscal management, as far as economic management. The testament by the IMF demonstrates the continuous confidence the international community has in the Ghanaian economy. And we will continue to ensure that we do not drill from the program.
Right, so what exactly is the IMF latest update saying, Kofi?
Well, so you heard the commitment and the promises, but we have a verdict from the IMF, and this is contained in their latest release on Ghana's economy, and when they were actually, approving that new $367 million, you know, fifth tranche. And we understand, according to the IMF, quote, it says, the IMF Executive Board today completed the fourth review of Ghana's 36-month extended credit facility arrangement. This allows for immediate disbursement of about $367 million. But notwithstanding high than expected growth and significant further improvement in Ghana's external position last year, the IMF says program performance deteriorated markedly at the end of 2024. So that was the first indication we got when the IMF put out that document. But they also said that following the executive board discussion on Ghana, the deputy managing director, Bo Lee, who issued the following statement, actually said, quote, Ken, he says, faced with large, and the key word there is large policy slippages.
Okay.
Not just a slippage, but large policy slippages and reform delays at the end of 2024, the new administration has taken bold correction, you know, actions to maintain the program on track. So you have the IMF actually tagging Ghana's program as having large policy slippages. And possibly the only reason why we are through with the fourth review and possibly having the fifth tranche is that there is a commitment and a new, you know, promise or commitment from the current administration, who are saying that they will bring back the program on track.
And the current finance minister, Dr. Cassiel Ato-Forson, was probably the first to cite these slippages. What more are we learning from what he said at the beginning of this year?
So we go straight to the budget 2025, and this is where we started getting the indication that something could be wrong. And I remember when he was actually reading the budget, he said, quote, Mr. Speaker, key performance indicators to be assessed by the IMF staff in the upcoming fourth review of the program scheduled for April 2025, such as the primary balance, inflation, social protection spending for end December 2024, are likely missed. And these were the words of the finance minister, who said they were likely missed. He said, in addition, all structural benchmarks due by end December 2025 are likely missed as well. And he says, quote, Mr. Speaker, inflation worsened in 2024 from 23.2% in 2023 to 23.8% in 2024. Okay. And he went ahead to say that the 2024 end period inflation also exceeded the budget target of 15% by 8.8 percentage points and the IMF central target of 18% by some 5.8 percentage point. This has triggered a discussion with the IMF under the monetary policy consultation clause. And so these were the first indication we got in the budget when the finance minister first started speaking about the likely benchmarks and program performance criteria that were actually missed as a result of the large slippages we saw in 2024.
Isaac Kufia Jay is a lead data and research analyst here at Joy News. Thank you very much. But let's go on to the telephone lines right now and speak to Godfred Bobkin. He's a professor of finance joining me on the phone. Professor Bobkin, thank you very much for your time this evening. So the IMF has already cast a damning verdict on what happened last year. With a new $367 million US dollars disbursement that's coming our way, how do you think we should use it? Should we use it prudently so that we do not fall victim to these challenges again?
Well, thank you very much, and good evening. Good evening to our listeners. Certainly, it will show up our international reserves. But I think that even before that, we need to take an institutional perspective to how we manage our elections. What we have just read from the IMF, I would want to draw your attention to, again, the fourth review of the 16th IMF-supported program that was also released probably around the same time, or August, in 2017. when we had the 2016 election, which also happened within an IMF-supported program. In the run-up to the 2016 election, similar commitments were made by duty bearers that they would ensure fiscal discipline and all of that. When we were done with the 2016 election, we missed the program targets. In fact, the program was practically off track in 2016, after the 2016 election. In fact, to bring the program back, we even asked for an extension for that 16th IMF-supported program, which kicked in from April 3rd, 2015, and it was supposed to have ended April 2018. We concluded that program in April 2019, which also occasioned the KNK party at the Ministry of Finance. The data, right, Ghana, I wish we will have time to learn from our own history, and we will be ashamed enough to say never again in our history. So if you look at the inflation target for 2016 in the program, we're supposed to do 13.5%.
Right.
We did 15.4%. In 2024, the program inflation target, 18%. We did 23.8%. In fact, in 2016, the primary balance was supposed to be positive 1.1% of GDP. We ended with negative 2.4% of GDP. In 2024, we were supposed to do 0.5% primary surplus of GDP. We ended up with something close to 3.9% or so of GDP, right? So right. This has been a trajectory. In fact, since 1992, almost all the major competitive elections, we undermined the macro environment just to win over electorates. But of course, not all of them have gone the way of the incumbent. Now look at the price. Even though the IMF is commending government for bringing the program back on track, this is coming at a considerable cost to Ghanaians, to contractors, because government has had to cut expenditure in 2025 in nominal terms by more than 10 billion Ghana cedis. In gross financing needs,
okay,
we have reduced our gross financing needs in excess of 20 billion Ghana cedis. You know what that means? What that means is that we are not spending optimally to move the economy, to grow the economy inclusively, even though we have seen growth higher than projected, driven largely by environmentally destructive activities like gold mining. And I've heard government people celebrating how much gold has brought to us in US dollars without us counting the cost of that environmentally, health-wise, agricultural productivity, generations yet unborn, and all of that. So we have to pay a higher price in order to restore the program. But at least I commend the government. Just as also in 2017, government had to also put in place measures. Do you remember the famous 7 billion Ghana cedis excess expenditure in 2016 election?
Yes, Professor.
The Auditor General has to step in and audit it.
Professor Bob Kidd, kindly hold on for me. I'll come back to you. But let me bring in at this point Kojo Opon-Krumah, who's the ranking member on the Economy and Development Committee of Parliament. Thank you very much for your time this evening. Now, the IMF blames the Akufo-Addo government, which you were a part of derailing the bailout program through reckless pre-election spending. What's your response to that? Does the erstwhile government accept responsibility?
I think good evening to you, to your listeners. The expression I saw in the IMF statement was fiscal slippages in that year, and it talks about it being remarkable or marked fiscal slippages. It's a product of very loose commitment controls that we've had in our fiscal policy management in this country. And I think that's why we can commend the government for the amendments to the PFM, which seek to arrest those commitment controls. What will be important moving forward is how those new rules will hold. You will recall that in 2017 when we tried to arrest the situation, a similar situation from what we inherited, we came up with the Financial Responsibility Act and introduced some rules to try and rein in and prevent it from happening again. Unfortunately, the evidence is that it wasn't very successful. It doesn't matter the explanations you give. The fact is that it wasn't very successful. Our hope will be that the new rules, as introduced by the new administration, will hold as the years go by.
Mr. Paul Nkrumah, we do recall the former finance minister, Dr. Amin Adam, give public assurances, both locally and internationally, that there wouldn't be... give both local assurances that to the IMF as at December 2024. What changed so dramatically?
A finance minister can give commitments and assurances, but if a head of a ministry, a department, or an agency is also making commitments on the side to contractors, the weaknesses in the controls will end up that by the time the period is over, you will find a lot of commitments or sometimes arrears built up in various offices of government, despite the commitments that have been given. That's why I'm saying that I am hopeful that the new rules that have been put in from the PFM and in fact the consolidated PFM since they did the other amendments will hold as the years go by. The commitments are one thing, but the practice across the various offices of government are also another thing. And our expectation and hope is that it will hold.
Professor Bobkin, let me come to you. You've had the argument being tabled by the ranking member on the Economy and Development Committee. Do you think that's enough? It holds enough water?
Well, it's Ghana's loss. It's not the politician's loss. That's how I take it. It's the taxpayer's loss. It's not the politician. Ultimately, they are not the one to be held responsible. It's you and I, an ordinary Ghanaian, the taxpayer and private sector, that will bear the burden. The politicians always get away. They always get away. And that is why the incentive to repeat that is consistent. It's as simple as that. Look, let me tell you something. Even when the NPP government put in place the Fiscal Responsibility Act, they themselves never complied with it. The 5% limit, fiscal deficit limit in the Fiscal Responsibility Act, they themselves never complied with it. They decided to treat the energy sector and the financial sector cleanup cost as outliers off the line so that they could meet the 5%. But if you include that, we're doing in excess of 7% under the words of the NDC. When they said in opposition that they were going to set up an independent fiscal council as an internal restraint agency in Ghana, the president of Ghana at that time made it advisory. It was just a good way to say this thing, we don't want it to work. Okay, so it's not just, we can pass laws and laws and laws. It's about walking our talk and talking our work. Ensuring that the sanction regime works effectively. We must hold them accountable, not the taxpayer.
Professor Bobkin, this tranche of the money was supposed to arrive somewhere in May. Could these spillages that the IMF speak about be the reason why it delayed till now?
Well, usually when they reach the staff level agreement, there are further correspondence between the Ministry of Finance, Bank of Ghana, and the IMF. In this specific instance, there were other prior actions that we needed to also meet before the staff level agreement will go to the board, which also included a commitment from Ministry of Finance to inject some additional funding to ensure to restore the negative capital adequacy position of NIB, and then also integrating the Ghana electronic procurement system with the gift mix, as well as two other prior actions. Of course, government also had indicated that they wanted to audit all the arrears to be sure of where we were and all of that. So all of this correspondence and all of that usually account for the delay. So that is why it's not only this one. If you look at what also happened in 2017, after the 2016 election, you will realize that the fourth review, which again is the fourth review under this current administration, also took a while. Some kind of audit, some kind of correspondence and all of that, which also resulted in the 2017 fourth review coming with an extension of the program based on the request of Ghana government. But I believe that in terms of the $370 million approximately, our reserves, we have exceeded the IMF limit. We have accumulated reserves. So to that extent, of course, it will add up to the reserves and all of that. I do not expect that this will cause large volatility in the exchange rate because we have quite considerable reserves in there. But of course, government has to ensure prudence. And take it this way. The effective leadership of this country should not be seen merely just in terms of the first year and the second year of a new administration. We should be extending the yardstick to see how government will do well in an election year. As 2028 is approaching, and this is where you and I should be concerned, when government signals that they will not go for another IMF-supported program or they will not extend the current program, the question you are now to be asking is, what are we going to have in place? I know government is talking about an independent fiscal council and all of that. On the average, any time we exit IMF program, we are not even transparent, and there's less disclosure and integrity and honesty about our public finances and the data and the publication of that. It becomes a whole lot of issues about what is even the total public debt. But anytime we're under IMF program, all these things are resolved quite well because they may lie to Ghanaians, but they can't lie to the fund because there are inherent penalties if you lie to the fund.
Right. Professor Bobkin there, thank you very much. I still have Kojo Oponkrumah, who is the ranking member on the Economy and Development Committee. Mr. Oponkrumah, did the elections force the New Patriotic Party government to overspend and result in these spillages that the IMF's talking about?
I think I've responded to that already, that there are very weak commitment controls in our public financial management. And the consequence is what you saw in 2017. The consequence is what you are seeing now. Professor Buckman just mentioned that when you don't have strong controls and strong transparency mechanisms, then you could be on a particular path in the first 2 years, maybe even, and then when you are no longer in a fund program or something going forward, the cracks and the gaps begin to show. Just last week, something happened in Parliament. The government brought a $360 million loan and tried to pull a wool over everybody's eye that it was some sort of financing facility. Why we had to be strong in raising it, that first of all, it was a loan, and two, it shouldn't be diverted, was because of what Professor Buckman spoke about, debt transparency. So if you don't have all of those controls in place and the necessary level of transparency, sometimes you can start off very well the first 2 years, and then as time goes on, especially when you are not under a fund program or something, you begin to see the cracks emerge. As I have mentioned, we put in place some rules in 2017. At some point, those rules were relaxed. It led to some of the challenges that we had. Our expectation would be that the new rules that have been put in place will stand the test of time, even when there's no fund program. Okay. And that is why when a few days ago we noticed that loans were being brought to the house but were being hidden, we had to draw attention that, listen, we've suffered from this kind of behavior before. Don't repeat it. So we can only wish ourselves the best as we go forward.
Okay. Kojo Oponkrumah there. He's the ranking member on the Economy and Development Committee. Earlier, you also heard from Godfred Bobkin, who is a professor of finance. Let's move away from that. And Ghana's road sector is drowning in a 21 billion Ghana cities debt crisis, with the government owing contractors for completed projects. Road Minister Kwame Gavins Agboja revealed the alarming figure, describing the situation as dire. Well, to mitigate the crisis, the government plans to release 4 billion Ghana cedis to revive stalled projects. Well, the minister attributed the collapse of road projects to delayed payments to contractors who often take loans to pre-finance public works. A critical example is the Ofanko Nsawem Road, which was proposed to be completed in July 2024, but remains in a deplorable state, plagued by potholes and breakdowns, causing frustration for commuters. Emmanuel Givenu has more.
This is no ordinary road. It is one of Ghana's most critical corridors, the 37-kilometer stretch linking the capital Accra to Nsawam and further into the middle and northern belts. From yams in Yendi to tomatoes in Techima, this is the route they take. But for years, this road has been in a deplorable state. Ridwan Kasim Jamal is a driver and should be in Burkina Faso by now. Instead, he's been stuck here for the past 2 weeks.
My car just twists left and right and my cross members broke it. That's why that my car has been in balance like this. So it's the road that is not good. It's not just because of the load or something. Because the load is not any load that I've carried. This is where I've been staying. I've been sleeping inside the car tonight. At the daytime, then I'll be going and sitting over there because of the dogs. My car owner said that he's bringing in our new truck to come and offload the car. So the goods that is in the car, we cannot touch it unless the custom come and remove the device. There is a device at the back of the car. So that's what we are waiting for.
It is not just cars breaking down. It is the people too. Drivers, traders, passengers, choking on dust, spending hard-earned money, yet the road stays the same.
The road spoil. It make the passengers within the road top, they suffer. Some of the cars, some are 10 city, maybe 10 city, you see. People within the road top, they suffer. The road, they can't do harm. No excavator in the road top, boss with nothing. That's the boss with they suffer. Boss, I beg, make the government do something. That's what will happen.
It's too dusty. There's dust all around. And because of the bad road, the road is not yet fixed. So it's just bad road for us. So they should fix it for us as soon as possible. Other than that, we're just suffering all around with dust.
Me so me can say me pe scanning ti. My find so ni ba na me nyan kwan to me nosmas. Bra me head ehia me no. Aha, enti ye be pe say isio no hia e pa ten. Nosmas no kra.
What was meant to be a landmark upgrade, a project to ease the travel and open up key parts of the country, has instead become a symbol of pain. Years after work began, the road remains in ruins.
And if you look at the nature of the road, it's very bad. If it rains, you can't pass here. And without the rains too, there's too much dust here. As a result of that, if you don't have your own private cars, even the trotros, they are not coming because the trotro owners, they don't want their drivers to come here due to the bad nature of the roads.
From Amasaman to Saperman, through Midye to Nsawom, the only thing moving fast here is frustration.
The road is not good. Please, we beg, they for do for us, please. The road is not good at all.
Oh,
it's been 3 months since Road Minister Gavin Kwame Agbodja visited the site and promised action. He admitted the government owed the contractor over $45 million. But instead, both sides were committed to progress.
The Ofanko Sawam road has been abandoned for some time. We've been having discussions with the contractor and we came to a conclusion that effective immediately, they should mobilize the site starting this afternoon.
What is the ministry owing here?
In excess of $45 million.
To the people who live and work along this stretch, this road is everything. It's their livelihood, their link to markets, their way to the hospital when someone falls sick. So they ask, how can a road this important, one that feeds Accra, carries the north to the south, be left for this so long? Emmanuel Jivenu, Choi News, in Sawam.
Right, let's go on to the telephone lines and have a conversation on the back of this and speak to the PRO of the Roads Ministry, Nasil Ahmed Yate. Thank you very much for joining me tonight. I want to find out what specific criteria is the ministry using to determine which contractors will be paid from the 4 billion Ghana cedis allocation your boss mentioned.
Well, I think, first and foremost, good evening, and your I think it's early days to be talking about criteria use. The most important thing here is that the minister mentioned that it was important that we do some rationalizing to ascertain that the actual so that the double pick some contractors that they've been reported. This rationalization has taken some time, but thank God they are at the tail end of it. It's for that reason that yesterday the president able to announce beginning for the end of the month that this month was commenced payment to contractors. The ministry has its own system that we use for payment of, and it's an old system. We understand it, the contractors know it very well, and we are going to follow that. The only difference here is that today, as the minister addressed the media, he said that we are going to make sure that we show appreciation to contractors who has stood by us at the ministry through this all time, and they are still on site working, even though we are the government is indebted to them, but they are still on site trying to work and improve the road for Ghana. I think it's only fair. Whatever criteria we use to pay contractors, we prioritize those who have stood by us through this challenging time, and make sure that we cushion them up to continue to work the good people of God.
Right. Okay. Nasser Ahmed Iyate is the PRO of the Roads Ministry, and it's now time for a business. George is here with the latest. Take us away, George.
Well, coming up in business, the Finance Minister, Dr. Atuforsen, considers July 17 as date for the mid-year budget review. However, this is subject to Parliament's approval. And IMF insists firmly sticking to the current fiscal consolidation program is essential for the success of the fund program. The business news on Newsnight is brought on Newsnight. Now, Finance Minister Dr. Atuforsen is considering July 17, that is next Thursday, as the possible date for the presentation of the media budget review. Now, this is what we have picked up from persons with knowledge of this presentation. But what could be the focus of this presentation? As Parliament approved this date, there is more in this report.
We are learning that this is the proposed date and it is subjected to Parliament approval. The development should mean that the date could change in the coming days. The Finance Minister is expected to use the presentation to update the public on the revenue numbers and whether we are making any progress in meeting the half-year target. Also, what about its spending and whether government is on track with its fiscal consolidation program? Sources say the Finance Minister will also use the media review of the 2025 budget estimate to announce measures being undertaken by government to reform the current tax structures, especially when it comes to the value-added tax. It is, however, not clear for now whether the minister will be seeking approval from Parliament to spend any additional revenue that has come in.
And that is a business tax report. Meanwhile, President John Mahama has maintained that he expects the Finance Minister, Dr. Atuforsen, to use the media budget review to outline some fresh measures to help to firmly stabilize the economy.
Minister of Finance will be going to Parliament with the media review of the budget, and that will be based on the half-yearly figures of economic performance. And so we'll have a better view of what we've been doing over the last 6 months after he presents a media review. And I'm sure that after that, we can hold one of our statutory meetings to discuss how far we've come over the last 6 months. I know that there are many things that we need to talk about.
And that is the President John Mahama. Now, the IMF has charged government that it should fairly stick to the current fiscal consolidation program, and that is essential for the success of the fund program. Now, this was captured in a statement issued by the IMF after its board met yesterday to approve some $367 million after Ghana passed the fourth program review. It also warned government to sustain efforts to bolster what it describes as stability of the financial sector. It is asking the Bank of Ghana to do more when it comes to sticking to the current tight policy framework that would help in checking inflation. Meanwhile, macroeconomic analyst with GCB Bank, Courage Boti, says that the IMF's push for more to be done in the area of revenue is in the right direction.
What are the ways to expand that tax net? The approaches we've been using, we've talked digitalization, all this well. Has it brought in new people? We've talked using Ghana Card as tax identification number. Has it yielded the growth in tax revenue? And what are the other strategies? We've talked tax, streamlining the tax exemptions regime to rake in more from the corporate sector. We've talked about property rates to be able to rake in revenue from the assemblies level, and different other strategies. Have they yielded the result? No. And so our potential still remains enormous, but we still collect a very insignificant tax revenue relative to what could have been from the total population. And so when IMF is hammering that, and when government is hammering that, it's a genuine problem. The solution may not be increasing the tax rates or introducing new ones, but it's about how do we get enough from the existing handles and from the population where everybody pays their bit. That is a puzzle we haven't solved yet.
And that is the macroeconomic analyst with the GCB Bank, Courage Boti, responding to the IMF call for government to do more in the area of revenue mobilization as captured in its staff report issued after the board meeting. Now, Director of the Institute of Statistical, Social and Economic Research, Professor Peter Korte, says that government policies have failed due to the lack of proper research and data-driven planning. Speaking at a press conference ahead of the evidence to action event, he stressed that it is important that we use evidence-based research to guide national development and policies.
Policies, to really design a policy, you need data, you need information. The challenge we face is sometimes policymakers want the information and they need it today. They need it today. They are very impatient. Oftentimes they ignore the importance of research, importance of data, go ahead, and then when it fails, you see there is policy reversal, for instance. E-levy is a typical case where if we've done background research and everything, I'm sure we'd have implemented E-levy in a better way. The other tax handles that government introduces and then reverses because it didn't take research serious. But if we do, that will be minimized.
And that is economist and professor, that is Peter Korte. To the stock market, if you're a shareholder of Gold today, each peso, that is each share that you're holding, is up by 4 pesos to close at 2 Ghana cedis 5 pesos. Now, in terms of investing on the Ghana Stock Exchange, you made a return of more than 31%. This is quite high compared to other investment instruments on the market. And that's all for business on Newsnight. And Kenneth is ready for the news.
Well, thank you very much, George, for bringing us the latest in the world of business. Let's bring you more stories tonight. As in a dramatic escalation, Ghana's suspended Chief Justice Gertrude Torkornoo has taken her fight to the ECOWAS Court of Justice, accusing the country's judicial system of violating her human rights in the ongoing impeachment proceedings against her. Well, the move marks a significant turn in the high-stakes drama, with the Chief Justice seeking redress and challenging the legitimacy of the removal process. Well, this was revealed in a social media post by the Deputy Attorney General, Justice Remsai. Well, before that, let's listen to the President saying he will not make any decision regarding the suspended Chief Justice Gertrude Torkornoo until he receives the final report from the committee probing the misconduct allegations against her.
Undertaking your work in earnest, as the Chairman of the Council has stated, we've referred several things to the Council for advice, mostly in respect of appointments to governing boards and other statutory institutions. And I want to thank you for the approvals you have given us and for expediting the work of government. It's helped us to more speedily than any government in the past have persons in place to begin to prosecute the reset agenda that we have. On the issue of governance, we've had the difficult issue with regards to the suspension of the Chief Justice, and of course the Council of State was involved in a part of that process, and so we've done our part. The rest is left with the committee that was set up to come out with whatever its findings are, and based on that, whatever the consequential issues are, will be dealt with.
That was President John Dramani Mahama there. My colleague Michael Ashele joins me in studio now with more details from the Deputy Attorney General's social media post. Michael, what's contained in it?
Well, we know that he says that he can confirm that the Chief Justice, Her Ladyship Justice Getu Tokuno, has filed another court case, this time at the ECOWAS Community Court in Abuja, Nigeria, against the Republic. In that case, he says that, which was filed on July 4, Her Ladyship repeated the same allegations of human rights violations, which are currently pending determination before our Supreme Court and also before our High Court in respect of the ongoing removal processes. Essentially, Her Ladyship argues that by her suspension, she has, quote, has effectively been removed from her official capacity without a final determination, impairing her right to function and serve in the position she was constitutionally appointed to. Ken,
thank you very much, Michael. Let's share a few of your messages you have been sharing on our WhatsApp platform. This one is from Francis in Accra. He says, it is good to hear from the IMF the truth of our economy, NDC, and under the MPP. Honorable Kojo Ponkrumah and his MPP never accepted all because of the looting and corrupt acts they were engaging in. And then this is also from Al-Hassan Hamdan from Nyohini South. He says, if a referee reviews VAR and changes the decision for the sake of fairness, what's wrong with that? At the end of the day, we all want a transparent and credible process. That's what matters most. And this is from Ni in Mamprobi. He says, good evening, but I'm surprised by the attitude of the MPP. It is laughable. I thought the EC is in bed with them. Why the sudden change of attitude? And this one also says, talking about road contractors, is government in a hurry to bring back the road toll? I guess that little money can be invested into our roads. Unfortunately, our previous government prioritized a national cathedral, not our roads. And this one is from Issa Tanimu from Boko. He says, it's laughable for the MPP to claim that the EC is inconsistent in its decision making at a time when the EC's inconsistent conduct has actually worked against them. And it's now time for sports, and Musbao is here with the latest. Musbao, what's up?
Yeah, Ken, guess what? We are now just 30 days to go for the Joy Sports Invitational Tournament. 30 days to go. And already we hear that over 20 companies have signed up for the competition that will take place on August 9. Now, let me just highlight some of the events that will be taking place. We've got the CEO penalty shootout, which a lot of the CEOs are looking forward to. We've got the women's penalty shootout, the mixed 4x100 meters relay, the basketball shooting contest, the women's 50 meter dash, the men's 100 meters dash. We've got soccer, we've got Scrabble, we've got so many events happening on August 9. As I mentioned, over 20 companies have already registered, and among the companies is Safolda Ventures. Their CEO, Adolf Tete Ejay, has been speaking to us, urging Corporate Ghana to embrace this competition to offer them an opportunity to improve their visibility and also to create some bonding among their team members.
Yeah, folks, I'm asking every competitor to join because it helps us a lot. We don't normally interact with our guests, but this tournament gives us a platform to see each and every, you know, member of your team. So I think people or companies should join and come. I'm inviting the companies that I work with, Guinness Ghana Limited, MTN, ABL, Vivo, to come on board as well too, so that I will beat them to the game. Thank you.
to be part of the Joy Sports Invitational Tournament. And Ken, let me just wrap up with this, because in some 5 minutes, Chelsea will be taking on Fluminense in the semi-finals of the Club World Cup. It's a big game. Christopher Nkunku starts and João Pedro is starting for Chelsea. And of course, remember, Fluminense has Chelsea's former player, Thiago Silva. So big, big game. The winner of that game will be facing either Real Madrid or Paris Saint-Germain. And for many fans who don't like Chelsea, they're just hoping that the team will be knocked out. But remember, the Blues are capable of causing some upset, and they're going to do it. They're going to be in the finals, and let's see if that will happen. But their head coach, Enzo Maresca, has been speaking, and I'll leave you with that sound as we look forward to the game at 7 p.m.
Joao, Liam, Nico, the one that we have in this moment, they know exactly about, you know, number nine, Chelsea. I said already many times, in my mind or in my idea, I prefer to have four or five players scoring 10, 12 goals each than just one striker score 40 goals. So you can see last year what we have done with Noni, what we have done with Enzo Fernandez, and we expect next season more goals from all our attacking players.
And that was Mubarak with sports. And away from sports, the Jimeira Forest Reserve, spanning over 63 square kilometers of protected land in the Ashanti region, has been laid bare by illegal mining activities. A massive police sweep has revealed an environmental catastrophe far worse than feared. Four individuals have been arrested, with several earth-moving machines impounded, as the widespread illegal mining rips apart large sections of the protected forest. My colleague Nana Bwachi Yadam has more in this report.
A combined team of police and forestry anti-Galamsey tax force launched a coordinated anti-illegal mining operation that began from the Cobbin block of the Jimeira Forest Reserve. The team moved systematically through the dense forest, advancing to the Nkontina block before rounding up the operations at the Amanchia block, areas notorious for illegal mining. At the Cobbin block, newly acquired water pumping machines and tank fans were set ablaze to prevent the operators from regrouping. Supported by drone surveillance, the operations exposed vast stretches of land scarred by illegal gold mining pits. My farm is just here. If you see how they have destroyed it, you'll be surprised. Aerial footage captured during a swoop shows an alarming sight. Officials say the drone images confirm that more than half of the affected blocks have been devastated, with huge open pits posing danger to wildlife and nearby communities. In the operation, the police impounded five heavy-duty excavators and arrested four suspected illegal miners, with two claiming to be national security operatives.
Why ne catch us a police for Bira?
DC. The excavators were towed out of the forest. According to forestry officials, the Jimeira Forest Reserve is now at risk of losing its ecological value if urgent restoration efforts are not undertaken. Meanwhile, residents say the damage has already begun to affect them. Rivers once used for drinking and farming are now unsafe. They have destroyed the water we drink. They are destroying our water bodies. All of them. The Forestry Commission says it will conduct a full environmental assessment using drone data and other group evidence to guide a planned reclamation exercise for the reserve. But as the sun sets over the Jimeira Forest Reserve, scars left behind by greed and neglect stand as a stark reminder that Ghana's fight against illegal mining is far from over. For Joy News, Nana Bwachi Dankweyado, Kumasi.
And that's how we end News 9 tonight. After that, we have Gig Squad with Adobia. Adobia, what are we discussing tonight?
This evening's conversation is not for the usual listeners, I'm going to say, because if you're a parent listening to me right now and your child is not asleep, we need them on to hear what we are going to talk about. We have some kids who are doing amazing things, developing applications, and tonight we are going to have a conversation based on what they have done. So parents are going to benefit, the awards are going to benefit, young people who have been listening to the show are also going to be benefiting. So everyone should just stay tuned this evening.